Okay, welcome. Let's go ahead and get started. This is the second session on Windows Server 8 Hyper-V. We did a session a half hour ago on scalability, and now we're looking at availability. My name is Brian Sarasi. I'm a senior program manager on the Hyper-V team in the Windows Server division back in Seattle, Washington. And this is the same disclaimer I did last time, but I want to talk about it again. Just to know what we're talking about today is the feature set that's in the developer preview of Windows Server 8. It may change. Things may get better, things may change a bit, we may move things around. So everything that we're seeing here today is what is in the developer preview of Windows Server 8 that's available on MSDN and TechNet that you can play with today. But it may change. As I mentioned last time, the packaging and licensing have not yet been determined, so we don't know necessarily, you know, about SKUs or licensing or things of that nature. So we're not going to talk about that today either. Okay, so as I mentioned, what we focus heavily on is balance and mission critical workloads. In the last session, we talked about all our scalability improvements, moving from 4 virtual processors to 32 virtual processors, 512 gigabytes of RAM per virtual machine, new technologies like SIROV, which allows new network cards to have fast bandwidth in and out of the virtual machine, no latency, no CPU overhead associated with that. We're also focused heavy on server resiliency, and that's a little bit what we're going to be talking about today. Back in Windows Server 2008 R2, we introduced live migration, which gave us the ability to move a running virtual machine from one physical host to another with no service interruption and no downtime. We also had high availability. Through clustering, we were monitoring the heartbeat of the virtual machine and of the host, and if they went down, we would restart the virtual machine on the next host. Now with Windows Server 8, we're adding new technologies around disaster recovery and several new options with live migration to give you the most flexibility and to make sure that your workloads are always highly available. Maximize hardware usage. As I mentioned, the new servers coming to market are bigger than ever. More cores than we've ever seen, more memory than we've ever seen, and virtualization is the most poised application or workload to take advantage of those large systems. We want to make sure that all the new memory that's coming, the large processors, the 6-core processors, the 8-core processors, the 16-core processors that are coming are fully leveraged and used on your Hyper-V host and in your virtual machine. And also, this is really key, and we focused on this heavily. All the new technologies need to work with live migration. We're seeing some technologies by other virtualization vendors out there that are great technologies, but then you read the fine print and it says does not work with live migration. That's not gonna work. Live migration is key. You need the ability to move your virtual machines from one host to another. Whether you want to patch the virtual or patch the hosts, whether you just want high availability and make sure that your virtual machines can move when the resources are available on another host and are not available on the host you are. So all the things like SIROV, like fiber channel inside the virtual machine that we're going to take a look at in a minute as well, all these things just work with live migration. And also, we're focused heavily on virtualizing workloads that traditionally have been considered non-virtualizable. So these are your large virtual machines, large memory, large processor. These are your virtual machines that have high dependencies on I/O through your network path, through your storage path. These are virtual machines that needed technologies like integrated switching technology, firewall technologies. These now are designed to work with Hyper-V and Windows Server 8. So the first thing I want to talk about is some of the improvements in clustering. We touched briefly on this in the last session, but we're going to go a little bit deeper in this session. So failover clustering, as I mentioned, we're moving support up to 63 nodes in a single cluster in Windows Server 8, and a total of 4,000 virtual machines across the entire cluster. We now have CSV 2.0. We talked a little bit about it. We'll go a little bit deeper as well. This is clustered shared volumes. This allows all your physical hosts to connect to the same storage at the same time. This makes sure this enables our ability to do live migration. BitLocker support. We're now allowing you to do BitLocker in a clustered environment. We'll talk about that more in a minute. VM failover rules and prioritization. So how many people use failover rules in System Center Virtual Machine Manager today? Okay, just a couple hands. We're now baking a lot of these rules directly into Windows Server 8 clustering. And the key here is, at a time of failover when your server fails, you need decisions made instantly. You need to know what virtual machines need to come back online, which ones should come back online first, what servers they should go to, and you need that done really quickly to make sure that you're back up and running. So we're building some of this logic directly into Windows Server 8. Now today we're not talking about the next versions of System Center Virtual Machine Manager, but they're also will be leveraging these technologies that we're building into clustering. Anti-affinity rules, we'll talk about that more. So that's making sure that the virtual machines are growing in the right locations. Virtual machine health monitoring support. Clustering will now not only be monitoring the host, the virtual machine, but also the applications inside of your virtual machine and make decisions around failing over or restarting virtual machines based on that application data. Inbox maintenance mode. So System Center Virtual Machine Manager has had the concept of maintenance mode. I need to fix my server. I need to replace a network card. I need to do a patch and take down all my virtual machines. So evacuate that node. And it systematically live migrates all the virtual machines off that node to another one. We're now, again, building that logic directly into clustering in Windows Server 8. Clustering-wide task scheduling, inbox live migration queuing, RODC, so read-only domain controller support, and SMB support is all new functionality that we're enabling in Windows Server 8 clustering. So let's go into some of these in more detail. So new placement policies, virtual machine priorities. This is critical. In the case of unplanned downtime, so I have a four-node cluster. Someone trips over a power cord, or for some reason the cluster goes, one of the nodes of the clusters goes down. The virtual machines need to be restarted on the other nodes of the cluster. But now we have the concept of priority built into clustering. So the intent here is, number one, start the most important virtual machines first. If I have a three-tiered application, for example, I want to start the back end before I start my middle tier. And then after the middle tier is up, I want to start the front end tier, maybe a web server or something of that nature. So we now have the logic of these virtual machines are a unit. This one is the most important and should be launched or restarted first in case of failure. So we have VM priority, ensures the most important VMs are running. What's also interesting is preemption to shut down low priority virtual machines to free up resources for high priority virtual machines. So let's say again, node one goes down. Node one has a whole bunch of mission critical workloads running on it. When we try to fail over to other nodes of the cluster, what happens if those nodes are full? Now in theory, if you designed it right, that shouldn't be the case. But let's say for some reason you've had a catastrophic failure, lots of nodes have gone down, you don't have enough space or enough resources across your cluster to run all the virtual machines again. What we can do now is preemptively turn off the low priority virtual machines to make room for the high priority virtual machines that must be running. So if you have just a file server that no one uses, we can shut that down and we can bring on your mission critical, you know, exchange server or something like that. Enhanced failover placement, each VM placed based on node with the best availability memory resources. It used to be we'd just fail over to the next node in the cluster. And once that cluster was full, we'd go to the next one and we'd just cascade from one cluster node to the next. Now we'll actually identify which node is best suited for which workloads. And we'll actively move them and basically do intelligent placement on the fly in case of disaster recovery or in case of failover. Memory requirements evaluated on a per VM basis. We talked in the last several sessions, not just last session, but one of my sessions yesterday about NUMA. We talked about NUMA topology, and we talked about the fact now we can pass through NUMA topology and modify NUMA topology inside the virtual machine. So we'll look at that topology and we'll identify what host is best suited. So if you have a specific NUMA topology set up inside the virtual machine, we'll try to identify the host that's best suited to take care of that. Okay, VM health monitoring. So the first two is what we have today with Windows Server 2008 R2. VM health monitoring detection inside of the virtual machine. So clustering in the host identifies app failures and takes recovery action. But the first thing we have is host level HA recovery. So we're obviously monitoring the heartbeat of your physical Hyper-V hosts. If one of the hosts goes down, we can restart the virtual machines on the, across the cluster. We also today have guest leveling HA. So the guests are providing a heartbeat. The guests are providing a heartbeat back to the server, and if it's determined that the guest has blue screened, hopefully not, or the guest is down or having trouble, we can automatically restart the guest on the next host as well. But now with Windows Server 8, we also have application level recovery. So Service Control Manager, SCM, are event triggered. So what happens now is that you can tell, so inside your virtual machine, if the application posts an event, we can now monitor that event. And when we see that event triggered, we can go ahead and trigger a migration or a restart or a shutdown or any of the different actions that we have access to, we can go ahead and trigger. So what we can do is twofold. Number one, you can say, hey, the application may still be running, but we might be triggering an event that says the application can't contact home. So if that event is triggered, clustering picks it up, and you can write logic to tell clustering, again, to do things like restart. But also, if you're an application developer, we have basically a trigger called guest set critical state, and you can write directly to that. So you know your application better than anyone, and you can say, if this state happens, or if my application gets in this condition, you can go ahead and write to that key, which will again be picked up directly by cluster, and an action like a restart or a migration could go ahead and be triggered. So now again, we're monitoring the health of the host, we're monitoring the guest, the health of the virtual machine operating system, and we're monitoring the health of the application itself, all inside of Windows clustering and Windows Server 8. Okay, cluster aware updating, or what we call CAU. So this is by far one of the most commonly asked for features regarding clustering, and I'm happy to say that we're going to be delivering on Windows Server 8. So prior to Windows Server 8, updating tools didn't have cluster awareness. If I needed to update my cluster, it didn't necessarily know what to do. Let's say host number one, we need to do some patches. It would typically go through things like it would just pause the virtual machines or safe state the virtual machines. It would apply the patch and then reboot the server and then bring back up the virtual machines. But that resulted in downtime. So you had to be proactive. You had to go in and live migrate all the virtual machines off and then do your patch or your update and then live migrate them back. But now with cluster aware updating, all cluster nodes are updated in an automatic fashion without impacting service availability. So basically, continuous availability, zero service impact while cluster is updated. What happens is it simply knows, it says, okay, I have to update my entire cluster. I have a 6-node cluster, I have to update every node. It will go ahead and live migrate automatically all the virtual machines from node 1 to all the other nodes. It will do the patching, do the updating on node 1, and live migrate them back. When that's done, it will move over to node 2 and continually go. So it does the intelligent placement while it's doing the updating of the nodes. It knows where to move the virtual machines. And you can literally tell the system to update all my nodes in my cluster, and it will just go ahead and do it systematically. There's no manual intervention, there's no service interruption, there's no downtime while you're updating and patching your cluster. CSV backup in Windows Server 8. We talked a little bit about this in the last session. I won't go much deeper, but we've worked a lot to make sure that backup technologies fully handle CSV, or clustered shared volumes. People are using CSV for live migration. They want to make sure that the third-party backup tools and integrated Windows Server backup tools just work. So support for parallel backups. We can now do multiple backups, either on the same or different CSV volumes. So it's no longer sequential. We can do multiple in parallel. So the backup process will be much quicker. And we can also do it on the same or different cluster nodes. So we can do multiple backups from multiple virtual machines across multiple clusters or multiple nodes in your cluster all simultaneously. Improved I/O performance, and again, non-disruptive backups. The goal is, while the system and while the virtual machines are being backupped, no service interruption, no performance degradation. It just happens. Okay. So now, let's talk about high availability and data protection. BitLocker and high availability, Hyper-V replica, high availability without compromises. These are our next three topics we're going to talk about. So how many people are actively using BitLocker today on, let's say, your desktop or your laptops? Okay. How many people are actively using BitLocker today on your server environments? Okay. How many people are actively using BitLocker today on your clustered live migration and high availability machines? Okay, that's kind of a trick question. No one, because you can't. Today it's not actually possible. We're making a change in Windows Server 8 to enable that. So let's talk about BitLocker. So here's just an example, and this is actually a real world example. Pretend you're a cloud provider. The typical quote we say is, I have good processes in place, but what other safeguards can I use to protect my data? And the example we have, and this is actually in the news, there was a large power company, and they had a tremendous amount of, a very large data center, a lot of disks, a lot of storage, and the storage contained a lot of proprietary information, so it was their email servers, it was their content, it was their file servers. It also contained a lot of customer data and confidential employee data. Over 460,000 different customers and employee data information. Now, they did have processes in place. They would do things like degaussing the drives. They would do the Department of Defense standards of overwriting the disks over and over again before they got rid of them and before they destroyed them. But it turned out, well, actually, really quick, what Gartner says is about one in three companies use outside companies to dispose of their drives. Some companies, like this power company, actually did it in-house. Other companies rely on someone else to do it. Well, what happens if it doesn't get done? What happens if your processes fail or the company you're hiring doesn't do it right? And that's exactly what happened in the case of this power company. Those drives that they were getting rid of ended up on eBay, and they weren't erased. People were buying these drives, looking at the drives, and able to recover data off of the drives. It obviously was not good for the company. It was obviously a major breach in security and confidential information. So traditionally, encrypting cluster volumes, it couldn't be done. So what would happen is, if you have multiple nodes looking at the same clustered shared volume, and node number one tried to encrypt our BitLocker, the drive, it would work, but the second node couldn't get access. It didn't have the key, and it's using a different TPM, so it couldn't have access to get to the data. Well, that's changing in Windows Server 8. In Windows Server 8, we have cluster named objects, or CNO. It's an identity that's used to lock and unlock shared volumes. So essentially, that key is now shared amongst all clusters. So you can have a cluster, you can BitLock the single clustered shared volume. All systems can still access that BitLocker drive or that BitLocker set of drives. If the drives are somehow compromised, if they're stolen or not properly erased, the drives are still BitLocker. The data is still protected. It's encrypted and people can't get to it. So it's a great way, an additional way to safeguard. And now we're providing support when you're using live migration and clustering. This is phenomenal for branch offices, for example. In data centers, it's typically assumed that your data is secure, that the doors are locked, that the data is being protected. In branch offices, it's not as assumed. Someone can walk out with the server. This is another way. So you can now set up a clustered set, a live migration cluster a high availability cluster and still ensure your data is protected. Okay, what about disaster recovery? Well, I'm pleased to announce the new technology called Hyper-V Replica. How many people are familiar with Hyper-V Replica? I've already read a bit about it. Okay, just a few. Of those people, has anyone started to play with it or use it yet? Ooh, no one. Okay, so we're actually going to do a demo, and I'll show you just how easy it is. So Hyper-V Replica is about disaster recovery. Do not confuse it with live migration. It is not live migration. It is not high availability. It's about disaster recovery. What it gives us the ability to do is copy constantly and consistently your virtual machines from one location to another over nothing but a network connection. So if site one goes down, you can quickly and easily fail over to site number two. It can do it automatically, or you can also trigger a failover to the second site if necessary. A couple of the key characteristics. Number one, it's affordable. It's built into Windows Server 8. There's no additional technology needed. You don't need special hardware. You don't need special network connections. You don't need special switches. All you need is a network connection between the two Hyper-V hosts. It's very simple to configure. It works with your current hardware. As I mentioned, it comes in box with Windows Server 8. The wizard, it's a single wizard to set it up. You essentially point it to the second server. They're both Hyper-V, and they just start communicating and copying the data back and forth. All you need is two connected servers, and there's no guest dependencies. All your virtual machines can use this. It doesn't require just Windows virtual machines. Any virtual machine can use Hyper-V Replica. So disaster recovery scenarios, both planned, unplanned, and test failover. So we actually have a mode where you can test a failover. What happens if the server just disappears? Does it work? People always want to do this. There's a lot of high availability and a lot of disaster recovery solutions out there that you spend a lot of time setting up, but it's very dangerous and very difficult to test to see if it works. We've tried to make that very easy. Pre-configuration for IP settings. The concept here is you can't assume that you're using the same subnet on your two locations. The locations might be in a different state, a different country. They might be halfway across the world, and you're on a different subnet. Well, that IP information is transferred with a replica, with the virtual machine. RPO and RTO, so this is the amount of data you lose and the amount of time you're down. It can be measured in minutes. It's a very short downtime potentially. Seamless integration with Hyper-V and clustering, it just works. Automatically handles all VM mobility scenarios, so live migration. And again, you'll continue to hear this theme. All our technologies, we want it to work natively, by default, with live migration, and Hyper-V Replica does exactly that. And it supports heterogeneous storage between primary and recovery. You don't have to have identical systems. This isn't SAN replication or things of that nature. This is simply I can have a bunch of direct attached disks on site one, I can have a SAN on site two, and they can replicate between the two. As long as the storage is available, it will just work. So let's go ahead and I'll switch over to my demo and let's take a look. So if you're in the last session, this should look familiar. This is our Hyper-V host. This is running a developer preview of Windows Server 8 with Hyper-V. As you can see, we have multiple virtual machines. And what I can do is simply, like here, we'll take our Windows Server 2003 virtual machine. You can see it's running on host number one, which is the name of it is Server 1. If I switch over and look at Server 2, which is where we're going to replicate it to, there's only one virtual machine that's running, or one virtual machine over there, which is Windows 7. So I'll go ahead and simply right-click, and I can say Enable Replication. Also, if I go into the settings of the virtual machine itself, towards the bottom, I can also say Replication and Enable Replication. So we just simply type in the name of the server. It is Server 2. We'll click OK. We're going to push it over port 80. We can use regular HTTP or HTTPS. We'll go ahead and do HTTP. We're going to go ahead and compress the data. So before it's being sent, we're going to try to compress it, make it as small as possible. We'll click Next. Now it's saying, what VHD should I copy? This is important because if you don't want to copy unnecessary data, one option you can do is put your paging file for your virtual machine on a separate hard disk and opt not to replicate the paging file. If the virtual machine is going to be restarted on the second host or your replica site, you don't need that paging file. It'll just be recreated. So we, in this case, we just have one virtual hard disk. We'll click Next. And now we have some options regarding history and how many states we should save. The default is store only the latest point for recovery. But you can change that. And you can keep history here as well. You can change the number as many as you want. You can say keep 5 instances, or 5, if you will, snapshots of this virtual machine on my replication server. You can also set up how often it should go ahead and do the copy. If you want, you can set it every 4 hours. You can set it more frequently than that. You can set it less often than that as well. We're going to go ahead and just store the latest point. And here's our information. So size of the initial disk. It's a small disk. It's Win2K3. It's only 932 megabytes. Now we're going to send the initial copy over the network. But we've also given you some other options. If you have a very large virtual machine and you anticipate your network connection being very slow, so let's say I have a 0.5 terabyte virtual machine, you don't necessarily want to push that the first time over your network, especially if you have slow connections. So what we enable you to do is put it onto external media. You can put it onto a disk drive, drive it over to your second location, or mail it. You can copy that initial copy to your replica server. And then it will just do incremental updates after that's there. So if it's a large virtual machine, you can use external media to copy the core of the data. But we're going to go ahead and send it over the network. We can also schedule it, but we'll do it right away. We'll click Next. And here's our summary. We're moving it to server 2. We're going to compress the data. We're using generic Windows authentication. VHD is not selected. None are not selected. It's kind of a double negative. Initial replication network, our method, we're using the network, and we're going to go ahead and finish. So just like that, you can see initial replication is happening. You can see the percentage, 98%. We have a relatively fast network connection, so it doesn't take long to copy the 1 gig. It's doing a final merge. And now it's still running on our server. All we've done is replicate the hard drive on the second Hyper-V host. If we move over to server 2, you can see it sitting here. It's currently off. These aren't running in some kind of clustered environment, but what's happened is all the data is on our second site. So if there's a disaster, if we need to fail over, the data is sitting there and ready to go. Now what we'll do is we'll go ahead and trigger it. I'm going to simply right-click, go down to replication. And actually, before I do that, we also have view replication health. We don't have a lot of information here, but you can see the number of cycles attempted, how many cycles have missed, any errors that we've had, average size of the replication, so on. But we'll go ahead and we're going to do a planned failover. So let's say site 1, I need to take it down, or we see a disaster coming, and I want to run it on site 2. So I'll simply go replication, plan failover. And now I know it's actually going to error, but I'm doing it for a purpose. We're going to go ahead and say failover, and it says can't do it, not powered down. Realize this is not live migration. We're not moving the state. We're moving the virtual hard disk and the data. To do a planned failover, you need to actively shut down the virtual machine, do the failover, and bring it back up on site number 2. So we'll go ahead and do that. We'll simply right-click and say shut down. We'll say shut down. It'll take just a couple of seconds. It is now off. We'll go back and go to replication, do a planned failover, click failover. There it goes, very quick, failover successful, virtual machine has been started. Now you can see it is off on our primary site, and if we go to our backup site, we can see now it's back up and running, it's being restarted. And just that easy, we can go ahead and move it back, we can say shut down, we'll just move it back to the first host again. It's not fully up, so I can't fully shut it down yet, let's give it another second. Let's try now, shut down. There you go, it's shutting down. And we'll do the same thing. And you can trigger this on both locations. You can trigger the move to happen on site 1 to site 2, or if you're on site 2, you can do it either way. Either of the consoles of Hyper-V on either of the locations can trigger the migration or the failover. We'll do another planned failover. We'll go ahead and fail it over. And just like that, again, it stops it on this host, and it automatically starts it on where you're doing the move to. So that, in short, is Hyper-V Replica. It's very simple to set up. It is built by default into Windows Server 8, and doesn't require any specialized hardware. Okay, back to our deck. Let's see, Hyper-V Replica, inbox asynchronous application, consistent VM replication, data compression and encryption. So as it's going across the wire, it is being encrypted. So no packet sniffers can intercept it. Windows integrated and certificate-based authentication, so we can't set up again certificate to basically validate that the two locations are good. Okay, so now let's talk a little bit about live migration. Live migration was a critical feature. It's critical for any virtualization platform. We've done a lot of advancements in live migration with Windows Server 8 as well, so let's walk through some of these. The first thing I want to talk about, and this is the theme I keep coming back to, is live migration is critical, and all of our new features that we're including should just be able to use live migration without any issue. So let's talk about that. In the last session, I talked about our virtual extensible switch. If you weren't in the last session, the summary of it is we've made a lot of improvements to our switch. We're allowing now partners, hardware vendors, to write extensions directly into our switch. We have extensions being written by Cisco, by Brocade, by F5, by various companies who are extending our virtual switch in Hyper-V to add functionality like antivirus, like firewalling, layer 3 switching capabilities, forwarding, things of that nature. As I mentioned, we have different extensions that you can write to. We have capture extensions to be able to do monitoring of what traffic is going back and forth across your switch. We have WFP extensions, filtering extensions, and forwarding extensions, which again give you that layer 3 switching capability. So the way it works right now is we have our team NIC, which represents multiple NICs, and yes, NIC teaming is supported with the Hyper-V extensible switch, and yes, NIC teaming and extensible switch are supported with live migration. Extensions in live migration, these extensions actually come with the virtual machine as they're being moved from one host to another. So extension configurations move automatically with the virtual machine. And extensions can also attach current run state information. So what the extension was doing, what the virtual machine is doing with that extension, during a live migration, that extension and the current run state information is migrated from host A to host B. SIROV, this is our new networking technology that's being put into new network cards. Again, as I mentioned in the last session, by default, the way it works today is in our virtual machine, we have our network stack, and we have our software virtual NIC. This is our synthetic virtual NIC. The physical NIC is communicating to our synthetic NIC. However, if we have an SIROV network, we bypass VM bus. We don't go through the Hyper-V host, and we can basically write the traffic. We insert the virtual function inside the virtual machine, and if you recall, we basically write directly. This gives us low latency. This reduces the CPU overhead on the host. And this also has the potential to increase performance of networking throughput substantially. From the virtual machine perspective, it just sees it as a NIC. It's no different than that. And here we have active information being transferred. Now, in the case of a live migration, what happens is on the other side, whether you have an SIROV NIC or a synthetic NIC, we go ahead, and what we'll actually do is on the first one, we'll turn off the SIROV functionality. We'll continue to go back to using the software NIC temporarily right before the migration. We go ahead and migrate the virtual machine from host 1 to host 2. After the migration is done, we then re-enable the SIROV virtual network function, and then the traffic continues. But one of the keys is whether you have an SIROV NIC or not on the second host, we will continue to run. If it's not present and not there, we'll just go back to the synthetic NIC. Now, you can set up rules and policies to say don't migrate to a host that doesn't have SIROV. But the point is, if you need to live migrate the virtual machine, in case of, again, unplanned downtime or, you know, there's a problem with the server, you want it to get back up and running regardless if you're using SRLV. So if it's there, we'll turn it back on. And if it's not on the destination host, we'll use traditional synthetic networking. Okay, guest clustering, increased storage support, fiber channel from the guests. How many people have wanted this feature? Okay, a few. So this is critical for a number of reasons. We've always had fiber channel support on the host, but we've told you to basically create a virtual machine on your fiber channel attached store, or excuse me, a virtual hard disk on your fiber channel attached storage, and that's how you get access to your fiber channel SAN. But now we're enabling you to basically have a fiber channel adapter inside the virtual machine itself. It shows up in Device Manager. It can be directly attached then to the physical HBA and directly to the storage array. So traditionally, in guest clustering, the clustering services run inside of the VM, but we've required iSCSI. That's the way we've done guest clustering. There's multiple scenarios where customers want to use both guest clustering and host clustering. Host clustering for live migration and high availability, and guest clustering for high availability of the applications inside the virtual machine, again, such as Exchange and SQL. Traditionally, you've had to use iSCSI. Now you can either use iSCSI or Fibre Channel. We can attach up to 4 virtual HBAs or Fibre Channel adapters in a single virtual machine, and we simply use the worldwide names to attach the adapter to the storage or to the HBA. Okay. So really quickly, virtual fiber channel, again, allowing multipathing. So not only can we use fiber channel connect to the storage, but of course we can use fiber channel multipathing. So if a single path going out of your physical server gets compromised, it will use other paths to get the data there. It uses standard MPIO and DISM. Host multipathing and guest multipathing can be used simultaneously. So you can have host multipaths to your SAN and guest multipaths. You can use one, you can use the other, you can use the both simultaneously. There's no limitation. And of course, as always, it works with live migration. So now we'll just take a look. And what I've done, I actually don't have a fiber channel adapter attached to my demo machine, but I'm actually using a fiber channel emulator, so you'll have to pretend here for just a moment. But if we go into one of our virtual machines, well, first of all, we'll go to the one that's off. Oh, are we up? Yep. We'll go to the one that's off. And you can see up here in Add Hardware, it's just that simple. The fiber channel adapter is sitting right there. So, of course, we can add the SCSI controllers. Yesterday, I talked about a little bit about remote FX, video card adapters, but now we have fiber channel adapters as well. And you can simply add it to the machine. This is my my fake SAN that I've set up. And, you know, you can set the worldwide naming convention, things of that nature. Also, over here, not only do we have our virtual switch manager, but we have our virtual storage manager now. This is where you connect and set up the storage for your, you know, fiber channel SANs and things of the like. So here you can see I've set up again an emulated Contoso fiber channel SAN. If we look at one of our running virtual machines, we can see that we've added the fiber channel adapter into the virtual machine. We've connected it to our emulated fiber channel SAN. We're connecting to it again via traditional worldwide naming conventions. If I go into the virtual machine and go into Device Manager, as to be expected, where's our storage? Storage controllers, right here, the HBA. The synthetic HBA, fiber channel HBA from Hyper-V is being presented in Device Manager. So let's go ahead and switch back. So that is fiber channel inside of the virtual machine. And again, the key is you can do fiber channel on the host, you can do multipathing on the host, and you can do it in the guest all simultaneously. So now let's talk more about high availability with live migration and our different live migration options. So live migration, this is the way we do it today. The architecture is pretty simple. We have node 1, node 2. We set them up with a traditional Windows cluster. The virtual machines essentially become highly available resources that can migrate back and forth between the various nodes. Historically, we have allowed the shared storage. We allow the shared storage to be over SAS or iSCSI or Fibre Channel, but now we also allow SMB. Again, SMB is fully supported in Windows Server 8 for file storage. Simply put, what we do is we essentially create a copy of the virtual machine on the second host, and we live migrate or we copy the virtual machine memory from host 1 to host 2 while the virtual machine is running. The key thing in this model is that the storage, the virtual hard drive itself, always remains consistent. It doesn't move. All we're moving is the information that's in memory. And the way we do it is we do an initial copy of all the memory from host A to host B. Then we look back and determine what's changed. And then we copy those changes over. And then we look back and say what's changed again. And we keep doing that until the changes are so small that we'll temporarily pause the virtual machine and light it up on the second host. And again, traditionally there's no network interruptions. There's no TCP/IP drops. There's no noticeable service interruption from a user standpoint. Now we also have SMB live migration. So the difference here is this isn't a specialized storage device. This isn't a high-end SAN. There's no storage controller here. There's no storage array. It's simply a file share. So for example, you can set up Windows Server 8, create an SMB file share, drop the virtual hard disk onto that file share, and just like with the traditional live migration, we can now move a virtual machine from one device to other, but the virtual hard disk is sitting on nothing more than a file share. Now you do need to be careful. File shares aren't always fast. You need to make sure that you have fast connections and the virtual machine can access its data on the virtual hard disk very quickly. But for dev environments, for small environments, even for medium or large environments, assuming your file share is fast, this is a great and simple option. So same concept, we move the memory over. In this concept again, SMB live migration, the data is still remaining consistent. This time not on the traditional like Fibre Channel cluster or Fibre Channel array, but this time on an SMB file server. The next option, so now we have our primary one. Then we have our new one, which is SMB live migration. Our second new one is storage live migration. This time we're talking about not moving the information in memory, not moving where the virtual machine is running, but instead moving where the virtual machine is getting its hard drive from. So in this model, our Hyper-V server is remaining consistent. We have two storage options. It may be a networking share through SMB. This side may be another network share. It could be a local file share on the Hyper-V host you're using, or a local directory on the file server you're using. Again, no complicated or specialized hardware. In this model, we simply move the virtual hard disk from one device to another. This is essentially how it works. It's pretty straightforward, but here we have a Hyper-V server. We have our virtual machine, our VHD stack, and our source device. So let's say, for example, this is our local storage. This is just a connected storage device, a hard drive connected directly to our server. What we'll do is we'll go ahead and start copying the virtual hard disk to the second device. This might be, again, a file share, an SMB file share. And then once it's fully copied, we'll continue to copy and write all the changes to the drive. And then finally, we'll just switch it over and point the virtual machine only getting it to the new destination location. And then when that's done, we'll go ahead and erase the virtual hard drive off of the primary location. So again, now we can say, you know, I need more storage. I was running this virtual machine directly on my host. I'm out of disk space. It's too slow. I want to move it to a network file share that's fast, that's big, and has space to grow. You can now live migrate that virtual machine to that, or live migrate the storage of that virtual machine to that new storage location with no service interruption, no downtime. So that's the new option number 2. And now, kind of the pinnacle or the holy grail of live migration is, wouldn't it be great to move an entire virtual machine, its memory, its disk, everything from one server to another using nothing but an Ethernet cable? I don't want a specialized storage device. I don't want a file share. I don't want specialized hardware. I have a host here. I have a host there. There's a network connection. Move everything. Move the virtual hard disk. Move the memory of the virtual machine, the state of the virtual machine, and do it all without interruption of my virtual machine. Well, that's exactly what we're doing with Windows Server 8. We also think this would be a great idea. So we call this, this probably won't be the final name, but we call it Shared Nothing Live Migration, or SNOW for short, Live Migration. So here's our architecture. We have host one, we have host two. There's nothing in between. There's no storage device, there's nothing. Simply, we'll start copying the virtual hard disk over the network connection. We'll create a new virtual machine, and we'll copy the state or the information in RAM as well, and then we'll light up the virtual machine on the second location. For those who really want to know how it works, what we do, you don't have to set up special file sharing or file services, but we actually do temporarily create a file share to copy it over. The credentials are already set up, it just works. And then when it's over, that file share is deleted. But that's all under the covers. You never see that, it's never presented to you, it just works. So let's go ahead and take a look at Shared Nothing Live Migration. Okay, so we're back on our server again, and what we have, we'll go ahead and we're going to move our Windows Server 2003 replications enabled. I'm actually going to go ahead and also, just to show you, can remove replication. Replication not enabled. I'm going to go ahead and okay. Oops, one second. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're simply going to right click and say move. Now this gives us a few options. Down here is the move the virtual machine storage. The first option is move the virtual machine if the hard disk is on a shared device like SMB file share. But the option we're going to do is simply move the virtual machine. Move the virtual machine and its storage. We're going to go ahead and select our second server, which is simply called Server 2. Now here's all the different files. We have our snapshot information, we have our configuration, we have our virtual hard disk. You can select which ones you want to move. Again, if you don't want to move, for example, the hard disk that contains the paging file, you don't have to. We'll go ahead and click. We're going to move all of this data to a single location. Click Next. Now we're going to select the location where we're moving the virtual hard disk to. And the interesting thing is, by clicking Browse, we're actually now looking at the computer, all the available disks on the destination server that we're moving to. So it's the same interface you're used to, but we're actually looking at the disks on the destination. I'm going to go ahead and pick my SSD hard drive, which is pretty quick. We'll pick the virtual machine folder. We'll click Select Folder. So we're going to move it to the F drive on the destination server. Click Next, here's our summary, and we'll go ahead and click Finish. It's just that easy. There's nothing between these two machines other than this network cable. Now, it takes a few seconds before the progress indicator starts going, but we're going to see it here in just a minute. There it goes. If we look back here, it's continuing to run. If we go into the virtual machine, we're continuing, you know, we can move things around, we can log on to the virtual machine while the migration is happening. Virtual machine right there. So it says it's disconnected because I was doing a remote desktop connection or a VM connection into the virtual machine. And our virtual machine is gone. It is off our server. If we move back to server number two, you can see it's back up and running. No service interruption. It just happened. And again, over nothing but a network cable. Okay. Where did my clicker go? Okay, so here is a summary of what we call mobility without limits. Oops. We have live migration. Back in Windows Server 2008, we didn't have it. We had live migration. We still have it now. We have multiple different options. We have live storage migration. We have live migration using shared storage, such as SMB, which is brand new. We have, again, live storage migration and live migration between clusters, shared nothing live migration. So we have four different options. We have traditional live migration using clustering. And some people say, well, why would I even want that if I have shared nothing live migration? Well, one of the key things is you still have high availability. It's still good for unplanned downtime. It's still using clustering services to be able to monitor the health and the performance and be able to trigger migrations. But now we also have live migration using a file share. We also have live migration of the hard disk. And we also have shared nothing live migration, which moves the hard disk and the virtual machine itself. So here's some of the things that we've talked about in this session. Fault tolerant, Windows hardware error correction, node redundancy, live migration for planned downtime, failover clustering for unplanned downtime, IO redundancy, we have network load balancing, failover via Windows NIC teaming. We have storage multipath I/O for both the virtual machine and the host. We have multi-channel SMB. So with SMB now, we can basically, again, create a SMB file share and connect to it via multiple NICs simultaneously. Application service failover, non-cluster aware applications can now trigger an alert to get themselves failed over. This is some of the new functionality we were talking about in clustering. VM guest clustering, not only over iSCSI, but over Fibre Channel. VM guest teaming, we can team NICs, we can team SRLV NICs. And disaster recovery. We now have Hyper-V replica for asynchronous replication, and we have integration with storage area arrays or SANs for synchronous replication as well. So over the last two sessions, we did a lot of technologies. There was a lot of information in there, new scalability limits, new live migration options, new PowerShell commandlets. There's a lot that we took a look at. And really, there's a lot more coming as well. And there's a lot more technical information that will be coming as we get closer to releasing beta. So if you already haven't started playing with this now, I highly encourage you to. You can download the developer preview, use all the features that we looked at today, start playing with them, understanding them, and as we get closer to beta and RC and release, more information will be available. So with that, I'll say thank you very much. I've had an absolutely wonderful time here this week. I hope this session and all the sessions this week have been useful. I will be up here. We're not going to do a microphone for questions, but I'll invite Vasily up here as well. And if you have any questions, feel free to come up. I will warn you that it is possible that I'll have to say I can't talk about that yet. What we've disclosed up here today over the last 2 days is what I am allowed to disclose. There's other things, there's intricacies that we're not talking about yet. So if I do tell you, I'm sorry, I can't talk about that yet, I apologize. You'll have to wait over the next few months as we disclose more information. But do please come up and ask any questions you have. So with that, I'll say thank you very much. It's been an absolutely great week. Thank you.